This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey. Chapter 57. The whole thing had probably lasted seconds, and not the interminable age that dragged through Tom's mind as he lay listening to Catriona cry for help. He heard Callum move through the heavy fog surrounding him, try to rise and then falling back to the beach. An ineffectual rock, thrown he supposed by the crippled giant, plonked close to Silas. He did not even notice it. The creature who called himself Tom's father was outlined by sporadic, incandescent flashes. He leaned to one side, his shoulder a misshapen mass that seemed little more than an inconvenience that would soon pass. Catriona's cries softened, and Tom felt the disruptive flow of electricity wane in his body. He was barely aware of anything beyond a need to help the girl, barely aware of the fact that every time he moved towards Silas, the man lashed out and brought him down again, twitching, an instant, barely human wreck. Tom searched for a way out. He thought of his powers, dream words. He could travel through time. He was powerful. And yet, at that moment, he was a baby. Useless. He brought them to him, the words. A crazy swarm, immersing, surrounding him, Craigan, sea and air. But he was fuddled, had no idea what to look for. Somewhere, in that system or outside, he smelled something familiar. He looked at all these links waiting for him, every answer there ever was at his mental fingertips. But still he had no idea where to go, what to look for. A noise, definitely in the world of pain outside, snapped him back to life. Callum hauled himself hand over fist along the ground towards his daughter, towards the creature mutilating her, blow after blow after blow. Tom struggled to join them, to help. If they reached Silas together, they might be able to stop him. Somewhere in his head, someone said, "No chance." Tom hadn't noticed the smell of the sea, and the confusing aroma of barbecued beef had faded to the background. But now that they were gone, he noted the change, his hazy mind drifting in and out of consciousness, swinging from dream to now and back again. Silas, drenched and demonic, at last saw Callum crawling towards him. He looked at the beaten man, face down a few yards from Tom and the girl. Silas laughed. He actually laughed. A part of Tom he could not reach, a place, a being. More determined, stronger than the weak body he occupied, picked up a stone and threw it. Silas swung his head, saw Tom and ignored him. He closed on the giant, taking his time, enjoying his moment of supreme power. Inch by inch he closed the gap. He would kill Callum now, it was time. Silas stood over Catriona's father, consumed by madness. He prepared the lazy swipe that would put an end to the annoyance at his feet. Callum, pathetic, lost, reached out, his hand trembling in the gloom. Tom saw this and realized that the first hint of dawn was dulling the night. Silas looked at his foot, watched curiously as Callum gripped his insulated boot at his ankle, and he chuckled. He brought the rod down again, hard and fast. Tom watched with grim detachment. The smell, he knew it. It ripped through the fog, strong, stinging his nostrils, familiar, commonplace. And as Silas struck, he recognized it too, driving through his insanity, his crazed and frenetic attack. He understood too late that he'd missed the one thing that could kill him, his own obsessive cruelty. Tom recognized the smell, the pungent claw of petrol in his nostrils, the back of his throat. He saw a hint of red, the can, behind Callum's crawling trail. And as the rod found its home, Silas screamed a belated recognition. The arc leapt from its tip to the giant's disfigured face. Tom thought he saw Callum's white teeth flash a final smile. Silas leapt back, but caught by the ankle, he fell. Callum, the strength of a lifetime focused in one instant, brought both hands forward as the fuel ignited. Covered from head to toe, he burst into flames. Silent but for the whimph of the ignition, Katriana's father continued his slow, indefatigable crawl, hand over hand up Silas's leg. Silas screamed, kicked, tried helplessly to get away. His rod was gone, his clothes ablaze. Katriana remained thankfully unconscious. Callum and Silas were one now, together, pushing back the remains of the night in a giant, writhing fireball. Silas's screams deafened everything. There was no surf, no mountain stream, no scratch of pebble on stone. Only the blood-chilling sound of the torturer echoing the throes of past victims. Tom, recovering by the second, crawled and knelt and finally stood. But it was too late. He knew it was too late, but still, so close to the sea, he scooped handfuls of water, threw it like spit on a furnace into the flaming embrace. He took the can, now empty, and filled it with cool, clear sea. Everything he did seemed to take forever, and with every second, every scorch of his skin, the futility threatened to crush his spirit. Still, he fought on. And finally, the remains charred beyond recognition, Tom doused the flames. Chapter 58. Tom carried Katriana into the cottage, her arms dead swans floating at her sides. He placed her on the settee and retrieved the remnants of the serum from Callum's room. Barely 5 drops remained. Filling a small glass with cold water, Tom emptied the precious fluid into it, rinsing the vial again and again to wash every last molecule into the mix. He moved with speed but infinite care, bathing her wounds, dabbing the runny lotion over every cut and burn he could find. Her eyes flickered beneath her lids, and Tom dripped the liquid onto her lips, relieved as she licked them dry in her troubled stupor. He repeated the action again and again until the glass was empty. There was nothing he could do for her father, but he had to get help. Reluctant to leave her alone, Tom suddenly wondered how Silas had got to Craigan. Surely he would have seen or heard him if they'd followed the same route, and any other would have taken an age without transport. Refilling the glass with clean water from the kitchen, he looked out to sea, wondering if the man had somehow got hold of a boat, but what he saw killed any thought of Silas's travel arrangements. He noticed the vessel and heard its engine at the same time. He was about to run outside, call for help, when he recognized the police insignia tattooing the side of the launch. It powered towards them, twin arcs of white foam jutting from its bow. Tom was ecstatic. Help had arrived and Katriana would soon be in hospital, but he knew he would not be with her. Tom ducked to the side of the window. He stared at the thing, cursed the one person he did not want to see. Dressed in his dark uniform, checkered bandied hat in hand, Chief Inspector Howard looked straight at the cottage, and Tom's hair prickled on the back of his neck. He ran to Katriana, kissed her gently on her forehead and squeezed her hands in his. As he did, unplanned and without the aid of Silas or the chair, the two shared a brief connection. For an instant they were one again, standing close together on Corvin. It happened so unexpectedly that Tom stood there, his mouth open, unsure what to say to her. The girl was distressed, her movements agitated. "I have to go," he told her at last. She was clearly bewildered, and Tom heard all the questions bubbling through her thoughts. Where was her father? Was it all a dream? An awful nightmare? But the girl knew. Tom sensed this despite her forlorn hope. A single tear bloomed and fell. "He's dead, isn't he?" she whispered. Tom took her hands and nodded his head slowly. "I'm sorry, Catriona." She didn't pull away. "He loved you so much. He saved you. You were everything to him. His life." Catriona drew close and they held each other, her body shaking gently. Reluctantly, aware that he had seconds to move, Tom drew back and looked into her beautiful, tragic eyes. "Goodbye," he said. Catriona remained silent, and slowly, painfully, they drifted apart. Tom looked at her lying on the settee, still unconscious, tears streaking her face, her body shaking as she lay there. Voices. Tom opened the back window, slipped into the new dawn. Hiding in the bracken, he worked his way up the hill, through the ruin that had once been his home, and opened the cave entrance, closing it silently behind him. And there he stayed until a helicopter arrived and took the girl away. The graveyard was quiet, the grass damp from recent rain. The stone was simple, a granite upright slab with her name chiseled onto it. Overhead, a small bird serenaded them from a low branch. Grey cloud masked the sky. Tom reached into his pocket and brought out the heart-shaped stone. He leaned forward and laid on his side on the grave, hugging his knees for comfort. Kathleen Henderson, 1852 to 1887. There was no inscription, no mention of family. She died alone. Guilt pressed on them as though the air had turned as leaden as the sky. He hadn't been there for her. All those years she'd cared for them, put herself between Silas and the children, and they'd simply left. Tessa and he had one day vanished, leaving her alone with Silas. Tom closed his eyes and journeyed to Cregan, felt himself whirl in her arms, saw her writing on the beach, heard her sing her lullabies. And his thoughts drifted, and he saw her alone, living her final years watching the sea, waiting, praying for the return. Tom wanted to lash out, but who could he blame? Silas was gone, justice in part served. But was it? He brought the heart to his lips and felt its cool touch on his skin. He imagined his mother lying below him, saw her as she was, beautiful and strong. He would have to move soon. They would find him here, and he could not allow that. Not while his sister was out there. Behind him, beyond the stone wall of the churchyard, a car entered the village. It was time. He turned his attention to Tess, felt her immediately. She was confused, doing things she didn't want to do. She needed him. Tom felt strong, angry. Silas, he knew, was only an instrument, he and his sister slaves. Never again would he allow himself to be used. Never again would he desert his blood and flesh. And as he closed the gate and faded into the hills, he felt, in some precious compartment, that distant union with Catriona, still strong, still powerful. And he knew, in any sense that mattered, he would never be truly alone, ever again. I hope you enjoyed listening to Tom as much as I enjoyed writing and recording it. I want to thank you for your feedback and encouragement. It's been absolutely amazing. The next book in this story is called Dream Words, and in fact it's probably going to be a trilogy. Tom Corvin is its prequel. Now, what happens next will depend largely on you. As far as I'm concerned, this has been a fantastic success, and I want to keep building on that momentum. Tom Corvin is absolutely free. Well, almost absolutely free. There is a cost. I would like you to think of at least one person, preferably more, who you think would enjoy what you've just listened to. Attach it to an email and send it to them. Simple as that. Once you've done this, you've paid the price for the complete novel. My goal is to have 1 million people listen to the first two chapters. So, can it be done? I think it can. And all you have to do is do what I would hope you would want to do anyway. So, take the file, attach it to an email, send it to the appropriate people, and listen away. I hope you enjoy. I'm Paul Storey. Thanks for listening. DreamWorks.com.